levels, right?
Okay, so here we go. 3, 2, 1. We are live at Agora Fest, and we're in the midst of a whole lot of violent political speech tonight in here at Agora Fest. Talking with the founder of Agora Fest, Nick Ludwig, in podcast 864, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, it's probably appropriate if we're talking to Nick Ludwig in this podcast that we talk about lawyers, right? The Bob Davis Podcast has been advertising various legal services to help individual subscribers and small businesses and so forth. And now I want to tell you about Virtus Law. So Virtus Law, first of all, has offices in Cambridge, Minnesota, Edina, Maplewood, Red Wing, Mendota Heights, and even in Dallas, Texas. But when it comes to business, Virtus Law, of course, offers full services. If you're a business owner, let me ask you a question. Are you thinking strategically? Maybe you think one step ahead when you have the time, and that's good. Maybe you and your lawyer think two or even three steps ahead, and that's good too. But the truth is, it's important to be on top of things today, and that might not be enough. In other words, thinking one or two steps ahead might not be enough. So let me explain to you a couple of reasons why you need a strategic thinker for an attorney these days. Because when it comes to things like management service agreements, of course, succession for family-owned businesses, estate planning, partnerships, and of course, asset protection, debt issues, and income tax planning, you need a strategic planner. So one of the things that we're going to talk about in this podcast is Nick and a group of other anarchists are thinking about buying some property. Well, they need somebody who is a strategic thinker to make sure it all gets done. And for that, you need Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law. He is the lawyer you want. Because first of all, I know Nathan and I know how he thinks. I've said this a couple of times when I've done these commercials for Virtus Law. He is a strategic thinker. And let's be honest, most lawyers don't really give you strategic advice. They are not necessarily strategic thinkers. But if you're the owner of a growing business or you have a little more on the ball these days, you could be frustrated with not getting strategic advice from your current attorney. You want to look at long-term planning and not short-term transactions. And if you are, then what you need is Nathan W. Nelson, one of the co-founders of Virtus Law. Full legal services, strategic planners with fees structured reasonably. Call Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law at 612-888-1000. Virtus Law serves small businesses and their owners. Visit Virtus Law online. They have a great client interface where you can explain your needs and get a good idea of the legal services Virtus Law provides. Or you can click on the Virtus Law banner at the top of the page at the Bob Davis Podcast. Okay, so Nick Ludwig, my guest on this podcast here at Agora Fest. I am going to start where we started last night, but we really struggled last night with Mark and Cole to get on the subject of what an agorist is and what an anarchist is. Because when you tell people, "Hey, I'm going to go hang out with some anarchists in South Dakota," they think it's a bunch of tax protesters or a bunch of crazy people, which it is, at least the crazy people part. And I guess the tax protester part, but why don't you tell me about what first, I guess we should start with what an anarchist is from your definition,
yeah,
and then the agorist part.
Well, as typical with any kind of a marginal or marginalized movement or minority movement, you know, you get, what's the line? You get 10 anarchists in a room and you'll have 11 definitions of an anarchist. But, you know, in its very basic form, right, it's a Greek, you know, Greek word. It means without rulers, and I suppose you know if you do kind of hang out a little bit with various anarchist communities, they tend to agree on that at least. I mean, then they may diverge pretty quickly into other things that they happen to like or not like. For example, there are socialist anarchists, right? There are anarchists that you would think, well, they don't want rulers, or they don't want even maybe they don't even want any kind of a hierarchy yet. They want, or they prefer, or they may even demand, if they're really insistent, that there should be some collective economic system, right?
So that's the genesis of the socialist anarchy.
Yeah, socialist anarchy, and I would say that, you know, particularly in this country and most of Western civilization, you know, you're starting to see a lot of people, there's many people that seem to like socialism in one form or fashion. So there's a lot of socialist anarchists or anarcho-socialists or whatever.
Suddenly,
yeah, and But of course, our group, I think, or I say of course, but I don't know, I should just speak for myself. I think that anarchy without a whole lot of add-on definitions or additional adjectives, right?
We have a peanut gallery, by the way.
There you go. Yeah, so anarchy without adjectives is just, yeah, no rulers. I mean, people can decide. If some people want to live in some kind of a collective commune and they all agree voluntarily to do that, well, more power to them. But I, for me, I like markets. I like free markets. I like to be able to trade with anybody and be free from, you know, government restrictions, any kind of restrictions, really, of market activity.
Literally no rulers and no. What about no rules?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's sort of a tougher thing because then we have to define what a rule is. But because, of course, you can't really live, right, without making rules, at least for yourself. And then, right, for us, for when you have two people together, you have to have some sort of understanding about what the rules are of behavior between us. Otherwise, you know, you pull out a knife and you say, and I can say, what are you doing? You're going to stab me with a knife. And he says, well, that's
the rules.
Yeah, it's against the rules. Or you say, well, no, my rules are I should be able to stab you with a knife anytime you want. So, of course, you have to have some kind of social structure, social rules they are. And usually they're best defined among individuals or small groups, right? That's when they work best. You know, when you start to try to apply a rule to apply to millions or billions of people is when things get pretty
Which is
stupid.
Interesting because Cole was just saying out there that if you define an anarchist society as really decentralized, and yet we're living in an age where decentralization seems to be the path, because if you look at all the centralized governments and systems, they seem like they're breaking down. I mean, even as they yet seem more powerful, the idea of decentralizing everything isn't such a crazy idea anymore.
I don't know. I think that yes, there are. You can look at the world, and I people sometimes accuse me of being pessimistic, but I don't know if I am or not. I do agree that there is great things that are happening all over the world, driven, I think, largely by market activity and the rise of, you know, people all around the world that are really becoming more prosperous. You know, you're just getting a lot less people in poverty, a lot more people coming out of poverty, and I think that's really great. And then part of that, I think, is very natural. That there's a tendency for those people that if they have more resources and they seem to have more ability to chart their own direction in life, that they're going to decentralize, right? They're going to find ways of living they're going to prefer rather than what the state or the government tells them to do. And so, yes, I think that's a really positive thing. But at the same time, we know in United States, I mean, there's and in Western civilizations in particular, look at the European Union, where there's more and more pressure by these.
Because when they're threatened, that's
right.
When they...
Yeah, political elites, they feel threatened, and they, what do? They put the boot down harder, and they try to put the screws down on people, and they're doing it. And, you know, and that is reflected not just in taxation and things like that, but all the crazy regulations. The police state, you know, where police are just acting really with violently and with impunity, and the state backs them up because, of course, you got to back up your law enforcers, right? Because otherwise you have nothing. So of course they're going to be backed up, and then, you know, foolish people will say, well, yeah, we should trust our police. And that's like, what have you read any history at all? Have you any sense of what has gone on in the past? Like maybe even the past, you know, 100 years. And then you kind of think, well, no, it's America. No, of course you don't know anything about history.
Well, what about criminals?
What about them?
Well, I mean, this is where we get back into rules. Like, yeah. are there criminal anarchists, you think, in anarchy community?
Well, of course. I mean, if you want to look at violent crime or just the sort of crimes against what anybody would consider to be reasonable, like, you know, rape, stabbing me, for example, that would be, I would consider...
Theft.
I would be a crime. Yeah, theft, things like
but,
that.
But, yeah, I don't consider, you know, I don't consider... political crimes don't count. You know, I think that's probably the, you know, you said that, so you should be punished, or you thought, yeah, or you, yeah. But then they never punish the real criminals.
Right. And you know, you see it now with Snowden and with others and Assange, where, you know, the government, at least they boldly proclaim that they have the right to punish somebody because they told truths, they told actual real things. But, well, these are special. These,
like,
are, these
they
are
got
secrets.
Assange on rape.
Yeah, yeah, right. They're trying to get him on rape, but really they're going after him on espionage, yes. Right? And so they're saying that, look at this guy is. It's not that he's lying, so it's not even a lie. It's not fraud. What it is that we, the government, the state, has special information, secret information, and it's against the law for you to talk about that information or to say it or to spread it, which is, like, ridiculous, right? I mean, look, if you want to have secret information, we all know this, anybody knows it, that has information about their own lives, right? You want to keep it secret? Don't talk about it. Don't tell anybody, because once it gets out...
Well, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, that's right.
But you can't do things without more than one person.
That's right. If I say something that I really... I'm embarrassed about, and you talk about it, I can't then say, well, I'm throwing you in jail, or I'm gonna put you in jail for the rest of your life, or maybe give you the death penalty, right?
The anarchic jail.
Right, exactly, the anarchy jail.
Why Agorafest?
Oh, okay.
What is Agorafest?
Yeah, so Agorafest is a festival, annual festival, and it really started, actually, I actually talked about this afternoon to try to sort of give a little background again for some of the people that weren't familiar, weren't around 7 years ago, but... Basically, Agorafest is a outgrowth, I think, I call it a natural outgrowth of our small groups that we started about 10 years ago, actually a little longer than 10 years ago now. I've been doing small groups and, you know, meetup groups for many years, even prior to the Ron Paul campaign, right. in 2007. But I started a specific Ron Paul meetup group in 2007, so we're really talking 12 years now that I've been doing steady weekly little groups in the cities, in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And then as they started to grow and expand, other people started to found their own groups. And so now you have a number of groups scattered around. We actually now have a group, a guy from that went back to Florida and started a group down there. And so anyway, after you get a few groups, then people start asking, well, hey, can't we get together? Where can we see everybody? Or where can we get together and have sort of
a big meetup.
A big meetup, yeah. Or a, you know,
and that's what this is.
And that's what it is, yeah.
Why isn't it more attended? How do we get more people to show up to this thing?
Yeah,
we're at this beautiful location in Gary, South Dakota.
God, it is. It's
at Buffalo Ridge. It's fantastic.
Perfect weather this year. We got lucky, and it is nice. Well, so we talked about that, and I said, look, it all comes back to the small groups, because that's where the life of any kind of, I believe, any kind of a movement starts. The life starts within, first of all, individuals, of course, but individuals getting together in small enough groups where they can actually gain and maintain strong personal relationships and friendships and trust with one another. Because
it's really, I got to tell you, it's a really fun, we did a podcast last night, Mark and Cole and I, and we were talking, trying to give people an idea of the slice of conversation. So this idea of nonviolent political speech is basically, we don't get into this, you know, discussing issues with names and political parties and things of that nature. And we did our best to give them just a taste of the kind of conversations that kind of waft through the weekend.
Right.
And it's great.
Yeah, it is.
It's a lot of fun.
I enjoy it myself. And I when it first started, it was 7 years ago, like 2013, I think. And people said, well, you should get together. And I said, well, okay, fine. Let's find a place, plan an event, you know, for a long weekend or whatever, and see who shows up. And we did. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of people, but, you know, you get some people that enjoy themselves. And it's pretty free form. Again, we're not tied to this. You know, it's not a business conference. You know, we're going to have many speakers, and you'll have...
you have to get up at 5:30 a.m. We don't do that.
That's right.
I got up at 1 p.m. So you get up. You're an early riser. You had a breakfast this morning.
I did have breakfast. It was great. But yeah, so we don't really have a big agenda. But some people like to do little workshops and seminars, and we can do them. And some people like to just hang out and party. And some people like to go walking around and looking at nature. And, you know, people do whatever they want. We try to get some rockets going. We've done rockets and drones throughout the years and things.
But if somebody wanted to do a seminar, they would be able to do one.
Absolutely.
If they wanted to do something like that, they can do it. And if you, you know, there's people cooking different things, and you can have different things that people cook if you pay them and or not. You know.
That's right. And people have, you know, people come for different reasons. And some people actually, they want more kind of formalized things. And unfortunately, I tell them, I said, look, if you want a really formal agenda, this might not be the event for you, because it's the schedule. I think every time people ask me about the schedule, I quote Heraclitus, you know, which is everything flows. The river is constantly flowing. You never can step in the same river twice.
Well, this is an event. This is actually an event. Yes. Someday this will be a big event. We'll be on a big stage, you know, with a multitude out there doing our Saturday night podcast.
Pantarei in the Greek, right? But and fine, if it is, that'd be great. But I don't know if there's any plan or any kind of a way to sort of predict that might happen. You know,
it would be fun if it did. But it is becoming kind of a, you know, when I missed a couple of years, but it's kind of neat that we do this. So in the second half of this podcast, I want to talk about your optimism or pessimism for the future and how this informs some of what you're doing, including the space program and other things.
Exactly.
So we'll talk about that.
Talk about space.
Okay, before we get into the second half of this podcast, Nick, I want to talk about payment processing, because there's a revolution going on in this country when it comes to payment processing, and I've been working with one of the best payment processors you can. I have a little ReliaFund button on my page that enables my clients to pay with check if they want to, so I'm pretty excited to talk about ReliaFund. So what is ReliaFund? R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. They are a payment processor that has been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. But what they actually do is integrate with your back office stuff and all of your software and all of your systems for how you actually get paid at your small business or medium-sized business, and they make it seamless. So they have all kinds of solutions for all kinds of payment processing challenges. If you're developing an e-commerce website or developing back office systems for clients, if you're a developer, ReliaFund is for you. So here's the deal. No long-term contracts. They're secure, technology-focused, and if you call them, you will talk to a human being. The number is 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040 for ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com. You can click on the banner at the top of the page, the BobDavisPodcast.com. They also have a great CRM that will help you. That is how I found them. I explained what I did and what my issue was, and Kevin Hill got right back to me. So it's real people coming up with real solutions for people to get paid easier and more quickly. ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. By the way, the Bob Davis podcasts are hosted at thebobdavispodcast.com. So if you want to listen to the Bob Davis podcast, you can do so at thebobdavispodcast.com. There is streaming, and also you just scroll down and find the podcast you want and then hit play on the player and listen to it. Also, we're available at Stitcher.com, iTunes, of course, the granddaddy, TuneIn, which works with Alexa, Google Play, Spotify, which is better for Android devices, and pretty much all over the place. I appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and thanks for your donation at thebobdavispodcasts.com for things like Mobile Podcast Command, where we're able to go out and go to this story and also experiencing things like we are doing this weekend at AgoraFest, talking to Nick Ludwig, the founder of AgoraFest. So let's continue. So earlier you said you're not sure that you're optimistic. We're talking about economic growth kind of lifting, or whatever, what we would call, you said prosperity, not necessarily economic growth, because that's a whole can of worms right there. But
right, the GDP is meaningless, right?
I mean, right.
Yeah, right.
But you said, I'm not sure if I'm pessimistic or optimistic. And I think this is really important, because we're talking about decentralization. And today I was having a conversation with somebody, and there's some discussion of property. and or a place where a number of people could kind of get together. And I'm not going to get into that specifically. But I said, you know, the thing is, 10 years ago, I might have said, well, that's whatever. Okay. But now it seems actually brilliant to kind of create a place where, like the one in Denmark, where there's actually can be an anarchist community. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought that was a pessimistic, that sometimes I look at the situation and I think I'm kind of pessimistic about the future in terms of the near future, in terms of the institutions that we have grown up with. Let's just put it that way. Whether it's the federal government or the state governments or the churches or whatever it is, it doesn't seem like they're doing their job very well. Are you pessimistic or optimistic about the future? Or both.
I am. I would argue, even though some of my actions and my statements would make people think differently. But I am optimistic, and I think I'm optimistic mostly because I'm optimistic about individuals, not about humanity, right? Not about the herd, if you want to use a phrase from
The
Nietzsche,
Walking Dead.
From Nietzsche. Or The Walking Dead, right? Okay, but Nietzsche. I was thinking Nietzsche, but Walking Dead works also. But the herd, because I think the herd is in trouble, and in particularly in Western civilization. Because
how is it in trouble? Because that's good.
Yeah, I think it's in trouble because of what Nietzsche would say is that it's become, and what Carl Jung would say too, and others, is that it's mass society has dumbed down most people, and has made them more reliant upon not themselves and not their own individual initiative, not their own intelligence. They're reliant upon the state or on others. And anytime you have a species that loses its ability or much of its ability to actually
reason.
Survive and reason and actually achieve and grow, and then you got problems, right? I don't care what species it is. It's gonna be tough out there in the world, and I think we're seeing that in Western civilization. Perhaps not all of humanity. I mean, there are parts of humanity.
Well, you're differentiating certain people from the herd.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are people that are, I hope I'm one of them. I like to think I'm one of them who is trying to be independent, trying to be an individual, trying not to follow. You know, the mass and not follow the common fashions or the common culture or society. I mean, my life has been spent basically being a radical, right? Being different than most people. So that you might say, well, that's, first of all, you might say, well, you haven't really succeeded very well with that. And I would say, you're right. And then you might say, well, maybe it's,
or you've succeeded brilliantly.
You're right. You know? But you could logically say, well,
we're all nuts. I mean, the thing is, I include myself in that. I've never been part of the herd, even though I guess I am.
But I think that at least if you tend to believe some of the psychology, like Carl Jung, and that there is that it is important to develop individuality, that there's a benefit to being an individual, to going your own direction, to be able to create and to strive for your own meaning and own purpose in life. If that's true, if that really is true, then if you don't have that many people doing that, then that actually is what I would say a pessimistic view then of looking at humanity as a whole, right? Because but some people think
that you have to tell them to become individuals, or that they're not, in a Heinlein sense, born as individuals and free thinking people.
Yeah.
Or are you saying you're pessimistic because you feel like we have to tell people to be individuals?
No. I think that,
and they're like, what's that?
No, I think that there's I think that there's cultural elements, including the U.S. education system. You could start with that actually try to take away individuality, right?
They from the get go, because they were training workers and some people say soldiers.
Yeah. So I do understand where the herd is coming from, right? At least I understand it. How threatening that is, and I understand that, and I understand them enough that I try to watch my language around them, because I know that the herd hates individuals and will either, you know, what we normally get a lot from when I talk about these kind of things, and I talk about our meetup groups and Agorafest, is that you get a lot of laughter, and mocking and scorn and ridicule.
And then the mob tears your limb from limb.
Well, that's right. Then the next thing...
Or prevents you from your livelihood.
Right, that's right. Yeah. The next thing that happens is that they can get violent, right?
And they've destroyed comedy. That's the first thing. They've destroyed... You can't... Nothing's funny anymore. Exactly. They're very serious people. Very serious. Right.
And the seriousness comes because, of course, they feel like you're threatening... If, in fact, you're in the herd and you feel comfortable in the herd... And your livelihood and your ability to survive is based on this collective thing. And you got people saying, "Well, you don't need that. In fact, that's bad for you. In fact, you're actually hurting your own life as well as your offspring and other people you're around by behaving this way." Well, they may take it personally, right? They may say, "Well, you know, you are now a threat to the herd. Right?
You must be stopped.
You must be stopped." Exactly.
So, and you were saying you're optimistic.
Yeah, so I'm optimistic for individuals only, and of course, the reason I'm cautiously optimistic is that we have found like-minded people, right?
Yeah.
What was Zarathustra said in Nietzsche's Zarathustra? He says, what I'm looking for, who I want to hang out with, is people that want to hang out with me, right? It's a great phrase, right? And it says, I want to be with people that think like me, that want to be different, that want to be individuals. And if I can find those people, then I'm happy, then I'm optimistic, right? Because there's some, maybe only a few, but there's at least some people that I can say, you want, like me, you want to find out what your meaning of life is and your purpose of life is. You want to overcome obstacles. You want to be...
Meet challenges.
Yeah, you want to meet challenges. And so as long as there's a few people like that, then I can have hope, right? If it's just me alone, then it's tough, right? Then it's a little more. Then it's tough to have hope. But I don't. So I'm pessimistic about Western civilization. I think Western civilization is doomed, and I think that's fine. Unfortunately, I mean, the conservatives, of course, will say, "Well, you can't say that. You know, Western civilization is the foundation of all of all great things and art and science. And what are you talking about? You're talking about the end of humanity." I said, "No, Western civilization is killing itself." And okay, good riddance. Then it has to go. Right? I don't know what's going to come after that.
But no one does.
Nobody does.
That's what's scary.
But
it does feel like that.
We know that Western civilization is doomed.
It's hard for me to argue.
If nothing else, it's doomed for demographic reasons. If nothing else, it's
demography doomed. Is a huge problem. Yeah. And the thing is, I'm not sure that. I mean, how many? Oh, this is a terrible thing to say, but how many old paintings do you want to look at and study forever? You know,
I love.
We
old
need
paintings.
Some new stuff.
I love old paintings, and I post them on Facebook, and then nobody understands what the hell I'm talking about because
that's
because
Western civilization.
That's right, because Western civilization.
Nobody knows.
I'll refer to mythology, which is very meaningful to me, and I'll talk about Greek mythology and how this painting relates, and then people will go, "I don't know what the fuck you're talking about." Right?
because we were supposed to study that, but
I didn't read
that book.
And then even more, because now, see, as I'm getting older, I'm not even holding back anymore, right? In other words, I don't give a shit. I don't care. I'm studying three languages at once. I'm doing what I should do and should have been done. I'm not trying to dumb myself down or act stupid in front of people. And that really pisses people off. Because then, you know, I'll just switch languages in the middle of a sentence or a paragraph. And I don't care anymore because you know what?
When do you find time to study all these languages? Now you're an expert on space.
Yeah, right. I'm a. I don't know if I'm an astronaut, but I might be. Particularly on Agorafest time, I'm a psychonaut, perhaps.
A psychonaut. I like that.
I don't know if I'm an astronaut, but so, no, I love to learn things. I've always loved to learn things since I was a kid. I've always been a huge reader, and I read fast, and I read with high comprehension. I understand that. I try to teach people how to do that, right, guys?
Yep.
You know, I try to teach you how to look at. You got to learn how to read. You got to learn how to develop your memory skills so you can recall stuff quicker. I mean, these are all just basic things that people are supposed to learn, right, in school. So I practice them myself. But anyway, the point. Where was I getting at with you were talking about mythology?
Well, I was talking about Western civilization.
Yeah, Western
civilization. You're optimistic
right.
about individuals who choose to be individuals. It's almost like you do have to make a conscious choice to be an individual as opposed to live the life that they want you to, that they seemingly want to live. And I'm being cautious because some people don't feel that way. They don't feel like they're being forced to choose a certain kind of life. And I wouldn't want to force them to choose another kind of life either. From my perspective, I feel at home with these crazy people.
Yeah.
And you. I don't, you know, I feel less at home as time goes on with people who are very, who consider themselves politically conservative, because I hate to even say that, because it's just a word that doesn't mean anything. I'm less at home with them than I am with these crazy people. You know, this is, to me, this is great.
Yeah.
This is great.
Well, we like you too. So yeah, so I think that I think that's why kind of we were talking about this, and I do have some optimistic and pessimism, because even though I'm very optimistic and very happy and pleased to be involved in a small little, you know, obscure group of people that want to be individuals and want to have meaning and purpose in their life and want to grow as individuals, and I'm also very pessimistic that, you know, most people that I run into, most of the people in my life that I've ever come in contact with and work relationships, everything, they're very much just herd animals, and they're happy to be that way.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to, you know, you don't want to pressure them, you don't want to push them, because they're just going to get angry at you, and that's dangerous. And so,
well, to me, that would be advocating. That would be pushing and I don't want to do that, because I don't want to be advocated against. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, and I hesitate. It's hard to believe that I'm saying this, because you know me. It's hard to believe that I would say I don't really want to have any judgment or be attached to a judgment about how people are living their lives. I mean, the right thing to do is to say, this is how I want to live my life, and this is what I want to do. Whatever you do is whatever you do, until you come after me and tell me that I can't say that, or I can't think this, or I can't do that,
right,
whatever it is.
Yeah, and of course, I think judgment is part of learning, and part of actually having, you know, part of actually having principles and a philosophy of life is, of course, you're going to be judging.
You have to make judgments.
Yeah, you have to make judgments. And of course, you know, I'm trying to be polite, and you try to be nice to people and say, well, yeah, look at your life as a, you know, your life is kind of a mediocre waste. But if that's the way you like it, if that's the way you want to be, fine.
I'm adamantly in favor of mediocrity.
Yeah, right. In other words, hey, I've been there. I mediocrity, as we all know, is very easy to achieve, and so sometimes
I like to say my podcast is at least as good as everyone else's.
So it helps your self esteem actually to be mediocre, right? Because you can say, "Look, I've achieved mediocrity," and you can too. You can also. So, but yeah, it is when you start challenging yourself and you start actually really, you know, saying, "Look, I don't know how many years I've got left, but I'm going to fill them with as much growth and as much knowledge and as much skills and experiences and talents that I possibly can, and help myself as well as I help other people as much as I can," you know, then that's what you, I think for me, that's the point.
That's the whole thing. And you're doing the keto now.
Well, yeah.
The herd is doing keto, and you've jumped right in. I'm a big fan of it.
I tell you what, you know, the thing about a keto, and that other people know about, so I'm just repeating, that you can hear on Joe Rogan, of course, over and over and over again on Joe Rogan for hours. But I can tell you in just a couple seconds that the big thing about keto that makes it work, of course, is that you're satisfied, you're not hungry ever.
No.
And you got tons of effing energy all the time, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so, end of discussion. You know, they're like, yeah, it's going to kill you eventually. Well, yeah, I'm going to die eventually anyway, you know. But why should I die in horrible health and fat and obese, you know, morbidly obese in horrible health, and I have no energy? Fine, I'll be keto and I'll die with great energy.
I don't believe the people that say that you're going to die. And because I've been doing this protein thing for a long time, and I wouldn't go back.
Yeah, me neither.
I've actually at a point now where I have to have a little bit of carbs every now and then.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing with keto, is carbs are a part of it. But
yeah, a little.
I went radically, like I only ate beef jerky and vegetables basically for like 3 years. I went nuts.
That's great.
And you know how extreme I can be. Like once I find something that is like the path, I'm like on it.
Right.
And I didn't even bother with keto. I just ate steak for three times a day.
Why not? I'm having no problem staying in keto, because you know what? Meat and cheese, If you just, hey, give me some meat and cheese. What are you going to eat next? What do you propose for lunch? Well, meat and cheese. How about dinner? I think I'll have meat and cheese.
Or some nuts.
I do some nuts, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I do, and I
and
admit.
And some eggs.
And I, yeah, I do some eggs. And then I admit, I get a big bowl of broccoli.
Oh.
And I steam that broccoli, and then I take a whole stick of butter and melt it over the broccoli.
That's good.
And so I'm like, hey, I'm having my vegetables. I'm having a little butter with them, too. I'm having a little vegetables with my butter is what
well,
I'm
you
doing,
need the fat, because the brain has to have the fat.
You got
to
have
right?
fat, man. You got to have it. So anyway, so that's going great, and I think I'm with you. You know what? I'm going to be on this thing.
It's a lifestyle change.
Right. I'm being on for the rest of my life.
Me too.
Sugar, carb rage, fuck grains and breads.
There goes my non-explicit rating.
Sorry about that. Did I say, I said away with the sugar and carbohydrates.
Sugar and carbohydrates, away with you.
Away with thee. Get behind me, Satan. Get thee behind me. So there we go. Now we've done our keto. Our feet, yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, we can only talk forever, you know.
All right.
Whatever you want.
Fabulous. Done, no, I do these. These are 30 minutes, and I'm done. Now, in the news these days, with all the talk about foreign manufacturing with President Trump, some companies are preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the U.S. I just saw a story yesterday that Apple is going to be bringing production back to the U.S. They're going to be making... I think they're going to be making the new iPhone they're going to make the Power Max in Texas. So that's one of the features of what's going on. So if this is you, you need a great American manufacturing company. And that, of course, is DepoStar right here in Minnesota. American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at DepoStar.com. Of course, I'm in South Dakota, so they're not right here in Minnesota. They're over there in Minnesota. DepoStar at DepoStar. .com. All right, thanks for listening to podcast 864, the Bob Davis Podcast, live at Agora Fest.
We did good.
Good.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Groovy.